Okay, ready?
Take three. Still rolling.
The Oscar nominations came out today, and we all know one person who got a big old snub. But there were a couple other people who we think weren't really mentioned that should have been. And that's us at Political Playlist. We're producing Oscar-worthy material here on this podcast, where we talk about the youngest leaders in Congress under the age of 45. Here we are having our happy hour, our little drink together, not winning an Oscar this year.
Welcome to Political Playlist.
All right, are we ready, guys?
Happy hour.
Happy hour. You fucked that up so bad.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Political Playlist Happy Hour. I would just like to thank High West Bourbon on behalf of us for the incredible support they give, well, our words, really, and our thoughts, and sometimes when those two run together.
All right.
I'm not rehearsed. This isn't rehearsed.
Yeah, where's your little notepad? Michael, I feel like you're one of those people that's been rehearsing your Oscar speech since you were like 5 years old in the shower.
I mean, I have a few. I can go a few different directions with it at this point. Yes, that's correct.
So can I maybe tell a quick story as we start off? Because it's related to
this is the what are you drinking? What's on your mind?
Yeah, so it was funny. Last week, someone was introducing me for something in a smaller group, and they were
winning an Oscar.
We were kind of, you know, making fun of them. Like, Anthony, you know, worked here, did this. And he's a co-founder of Political Playlist. Come on, like, what's that? And then I explained, I was like, oh, yeah, we're a nonpartisan platform. I started this with my friends during the pandemic to showcase young politicians under the age of 45 in Congress. And I said, when we started this, only 11% were under the age of 45, which is why we really wanted to start it. And now it's at 18%. And everyone was silent. They're like, oh, that's actually pretty cool. I thought this was just some random thing.
Wow. Luther.
That's great.
Like, I had no idea. So I was like, yeah, thank you.
You know also, what it all means?
Do they not follow you on Instagram? Like, who are these people?
Well, now they all better follow us.
I was being introduced to a group, and the person introducing me was a friend. And he was making a joke. But
unfollow.
Then everyone was like, oh, we want to talk about this.
Yeah. I also feel like what that number means is that we're getting a little older.
No, I'm not.
You're not.
Well, some of us are maturing with life events like marriage, and others are High West Bourbon.
Yeah.
I haven't done Botox yet. So,
Anna, that was a great intro. And you're so right that we did get an Oscar snub. I'm a little bummed about that.
Yeah. Are we bummed about the same one?
I think so.
Okay.
I am bummed that Bradley Cooper did not get Best Director. Do you have one?
That's
that you
not what
for?
I'm mad about.
Oh,
mad about Barbie. Guess.
Barbie. Okay.
I think Greta Gerwig. I think that both Margot Robbie and Greta Gerwig should have nominated, but I think that in the acting category, I am slightly less angry. But I think that even if you didn't like Barbie movie, it is one of the most high concept, world building, specific directorial series of choices that I've ever seen somebody make. And it not only won so much critical acclaim, it was the highest grossing movie of the year. Like, I just think to say that that was not a feat in directing is.
It's not all about the numbers. So,
you know what is all about the numbers?
Is New Hampshire.
Well, true. For politics, it is.
We have one woman standing. And do we think that she's going to be standing for much longer, guys? It looks as though at the time of record, we have a Trump winner declared in New Hampshire, Nikki Haley being a close second place, second out of two remaining candidates really in the race. She is vowing that she is not dropping out, that she said in her speech, New Hampshire is the first primary, not the last. Guys, do we think she has the money, the legs, the mojo, the momentum to keep it going? What do we think?
I don't think she lost by a lot here. She did way better. I thought she was going to lose by 20 points. I mean,
not like bye bye Ronnie Big Boy Boots. Yeah, not quite.
Yeah,
the...
She's down by 10%. I mean, once again, only a little over 100,000 people voted in this, and if she is not riding this to the end, I think that's a total mistake for her. Yeah. And she's pulling way more ahead than Biden than she is against Trump. which I think is actually a bigger problem to the Democrats.
Well, that's, I was reading something that said like the, basically the Biden team views tonight as like a win-win, because either like Nikki Haley does well and stays in the race and is able to kind of continue to attack Trump amongst Republicans, or Trump starts his like steamrolling of her, and then Biden, you know, they feel that Biden has a much better chance of beating Trump anyway. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the irony here, of course, is that, you know, all of Nikki Haley's, call it hardcore supporters, are moderates and independents, and even some, you know, conservative Democrats, mm-hmm. if you will. And that bodes extremely well for her in a general election. And precisely for that reason is why it's going to be very unlikely for her to make it out of a Republican primary, given where the Republican Party is.
I think that if I were a dictator, I would. Well, that's not really a dictator. If I were,
you're
like
talking like me now, Anna.
If I were to, if I had some sort of like omnipotent role, and I could just say this is how the system should be, I think we should get rid of primary election. I think the general election should all be ranked choice voting, and that then you would actually have people who represent the majority.
Ranked choice, like the Oscars, they do ranked choice.
That's true. That's totally true. And even they mess it up sometimes, obviously. But I think for the most part, it works very well.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. It's interesting to think. I was checking tweets before we got on here, and about 30 minutes before they called that, 30 minutes before all of the networks called this for Trump, Elise Stefanik, who has been making news lately because she is a rumored vice presidential choice for Trump, she was already out congratulating him on the win like an hour before the networks projected this. So I'm not really sure what kind of internal ESP she had going on there.
That's
because
she's not on a Trump train. I don't
think Trump's going to lose any of the primaries, to be honest. I actually think he's going to win all of them. So it's just a margin of, is it by 10, 20, or 30 points at this stage?
Interestingly enough, you know, I mentioned that Elise Stefanik has been sort of spinning the rumor mill about, or I should say the rumor mill has been spinning that Elise is a front runner for VP. And I was talking to an older Republican voter just today, actually. And they were saying how they were like, I've been hearing that, but she's way too young and just not qualified at all for that. And it'll be interesting to see. Like,
that's also hilarious. Like, also hilarious that people are like, oh, yeah, Elise Stefanik is not qualified, but like Trump.
Right. Somehow Trump is. Yeah.
Like, you can be a Trump voter or whatever, but to say then that she somehow is not as intelligent or qualified or whatever feels.
So, but it was actually coming from this person isn't necessarily a Trump supporter, but they were taking the position of like, you know, similar to how they feel about Biden, which is that they are old. And this, it kind of goes back to the Sarah Palin thing, is like, whoever he picks as a vice president, I think very much has to give people the comfort of like, oh, this person could take over. Mm-hmm. And this Republican voter that I was talking to was like, you know, the reality is that Trump's just as old and in maybe worse health than Biden. And just the optics of like a 39-year-old congresswoman, you know, becoming president is like, in this person's mind, was like,
can I give you a prompt to ask that person?
Yeah.
Ask them if they think that J.D. Vance would be a potential pick. And not because I'm on my Barbie rant, but I genuinely think a part of that comment is because.
But go off, queen.
But this is where things are interesting.
I genuinely think part of it is because she's a woman. I think that like we infantilize young women much more than we infantilize young men. And J.D. Vance is younger than Elise Stefanik. There's been rumors about him being a VP pick as well. Mm-hmm. And I would be curious, not to say anything like against the person you're talking to, but I would just be curious if, like, from a societal perspective, we say that, oh, yeah, like a 38.
If you're like, what do you think about J.D. Vance? So like, oh, great choice. Wonderful. Yeah. Splendid choice.
I wouldn't be surprised.
No, that's an interesting test.
I'll be honest. I actually used to lie about my age in meetings because when you're in your mid 20s, you think you're very smart. You're on your career path, whatnot. And then as soon as someone hears you're in a 2 in front of your age, they kind of disregard you. So I started telling people I was 30, 31, whatnot, and people would respect me a bit more. And even still though, like I'm 33 today. And when you say that, people are like, oh man, you're young. So now let's put yourself in the shoes of someone who's running for president, right? They have to appeal to that age group who's 40 to 50 years older than them. Right. So they're looking at you going, oh, like in my 30s, I was, you know, I was still figuring it out.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, I mean, at least definitely it's a woman. That like woman is probably the number one factor, but ages too. Okay. On this day in 1969, Shirley Chisholm became the first African-American woman to serve in Congress. Shirley continues to be a role model to myself and so many other women.
She surely does.
Hashtag unbought and unbossed.
Unbought, unbossed. Okay.
No.
I was going to say Lauren Underwood.
It's Lauren Underwood.
I am on a fucking roll.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I also picked Lauren because she is a fan favorite of this
podcast. We haven't talked about her a lot.
And yeah. We haven't talked about her a lot. And she is very young. So it's quite impressive what she's accomplished. But I wanted to highlight this because, once again, people who don't know Shirley Chisholm and her quotes, I mean, she really did so many things that I think broke barriers for people. And, you know, quick summary, she represented New York as a congressional leader. She was also she served for 7 terms. She was the first Black candidate to run for president. And she was the first woman to run for the Democratic ticket for presidential nomination. Interesting. She was known as Fighting Shirley because she did 50 pieces of legislation, mostly focused on racial and gender equality and fighting for the poor. And one of her most famous quotes is, if they don't give you a seat at the table, bring a folding chair. And
Have you heard that quote before?
Yes.
Yeah.
And
it's a good quote.
And I love this quote. And when I talk to younger people sometimes and they feel they don't have a voice, I'm like, if you're in the room, you have the voice. So use it. You might not have that seat at the table. You might be in the back, but go ahead and talk. You're in the room.
But also and like get scrappy, like bring what you have, you know,
bring what you have. And don't, you know, I think everyone has confidence issues in this world. Let's face it. Trump, Biden, but it's once again, and it's once again having that inner voice saying, I should be at this table as well with these people.
Well, can I just add something about Lauren Underwood that I remember, you know, reading, talking about, but people might not know, is that when she ran, I believe it was in 2016, it might have been 2018, but she lived in a pretty purple district in Illinois, and she ran and also lives in a predominantly white district in Illinois, and she ran, and the way she ran her campaign was very like on the ground, knocking on doors, very, very grassroots. She was a healthcare, you know, administrator and previously a nurse. So I think that it's like important also to showcase how someone like Shirley Chisholm and the sort of philosophies that she had influenced someone like Lauren Underwood to say, fuck that, like I can do this. I can run for office even though things are stacked against me because of my party, things are stacked against me because of my age, because of my gender, and certainly because of my race. And she went and she did it. And now I feel like she's been a really effective legislator. She's focused on issues of like maternal health and equality in health that really speak to her background. And she doesn't get caught up in like the mess of it all. And she just focuses on the things that really matter to her. And so I think that there's like, it's cool to see, it's nice to like have a quote, but I think what you do with that quote and how you enact that in your life is the thing that actually ends up making change.
It's about actions. And this is why I picked this quote for Lauren Underwood, because saying you have a seat at, you know, bring your chair to the table it's not being disruptive to the process. And I feel like the very far left and the very far right do that. And Lauren is a congressional woman who has actually gone there and spoke with facts and ideas, not saying, oh, you need to do this. She actually just sits there and talks intelligently and not creating a, you know, a fundraising circus opportunity.
Right.
Which I really respect in some of these politicians.
And probably so do her constituents.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I want to give everyone that little uplift.
Yeah. That's great.
Well, can I follow up with like a continuum of maybe positive energy?
Oh, God, yeah. This is too positive, guys. Come on. It's politics. This is politics.
So here we go. Our nation is at its best when Congress works together to ensure hardworking Americans have the resources they need. I'm proud we are moving forward with a bipartisan tax deal to expand the child tax credit and provide relief to working families.
Lauren Underwood? No, that's not my guess. I'll guess.
Sarah Jacobs? Child tax credit.
I know. That's what I'm trying to think. Who's big?
This is a tough one.
Child tax credit. It's a guy?
Democratic guy.
Jake Auchincloss.
Anthony.
Oh.
He's also running for Senate.
Colin Allred.
Yeah.
Yeah, Colin Allred. Yeah.
Wow, Michael's on it tonight.
Because he took the first Senate congressman to take paternity leave.
So, yeah.
Good one. Fun fact. Bazing.
So this is pretty crazy. So the House Ways and Means Committee, which is a committee in Congress, voted 40-3. Voted 40-3 to approve a bipartisan tax package that includes the expansion of the child tax credit. The child tax credit, in very basic terms, is basically access to a refundable tax credit that you get if you are a low-income earner based on how many kids you have. So what this expansion of tax credit would do is it would increase access for low-earning families. Now, in 2021, Democratic lawmakers upped the credit to a maximum of $3,600 per child and they increased the age limit that you could claim was your child, but that was only for that tax year. And ever since this issue has been an issue, it has been a push by Democratic members of Congress and state legislators, et cetera, and has met a lot of resistance amongst Republicans, which is why this is so significant. So according to the Center of Budget and Policy Priorities, they think that actually the expansion of the expiration of that expanded tax credit in 2021 was one of the reasons, if not the reason, why child poverty doubled from 2021 to 2022. So if this becomes a new law, it has a kind of a long road to get there, but if it becomes a new law, what it will mean is that this is just an example that I read that kind of put it in perspective. If you're a single filer, so say you're a single mom and you earned $14,000 of taxable income and you had two kids, under the previous law, you would only get $1,725 in this tax credit. With the new law, that would double. So this bill has now come out of committee with this insanely big, surprising bipartisan vote. Mm. One of the champions of it is someone we've actually never talked about, but is a young politician in Congress. His name is Jason Smith. He's from Missouri. He's a Republican. He's the chair of the Ways and Means Committee. Mm. He worked with the Democratic Senate Finance Chair, Ron Wyden. And it is coming out of committee. The three votes against it were not Republicans. They were Democrats.
Interesting.
These three Democrats feel that this tax bill, because it's not just about the child tax credit, it's a general tax bill. They feel that it is too pro-business and they feel that the child tax credit is actually insufficient. So some people are bashing that like the child tax credit in this bill doesn't actually give access to families that have little or no income, which I think conservatives would be very against because they sort of don't want to, you know, be crediting people who aren't participating in the economy, which you can have your own feelings of whether you agree with that or not. But if this bill passes, it would be, frankly, an insane thing in the incredibly partisan situation that we are in right now in our government, because this is an issue that has been controversial for years. And if it passes on bipartisan basis, suddenly it feels like, oh, there's maybe oddly hope around some of this stuff that frankly just makes sense for families as long as you can figure out how to do it politically. So yeah. I want to give my thought on this. And then
can I ask you just a quick question? You said that when the child tax credit expired, child poverty doubled.
So in 2021, there was an expansion of the child tax credit when after the pandemic, and that was only temporary for 1 year.
Right. When that expired?
That expansion expired. So it's not the full tax credit expired. Basically, Yeah, an expansion spot expired. Child poverty doubled, and there's been research to show that this was probably a major cause of that. So again, like I said, this has a very long road. It's unclear exactly what's going to happen when this comes to the House floor. I'm hopeful that this big vote means it might pass the House. In the Senate, it might face a little bit more of a difficult road because it is a fiscal bill, so it has to get 60 votes, which potentially could have some problems. But this is what I think, and I'm curious if you guys agree with me. So, like I said, the child tax credit has always been an incredibly Democratic issue. It has also been a very popular issue with voters because whether you are a Republican or a Democrat, if you are poor or you are low income, then you want money, right? Like that is a good thing for you. So even if you're not thinking about all the other stuff, it's very popular. Fiscal conservatives have argued against it traditionally. What I think is that because Republicans know that they are going to get killed on the issue of abortion, which is turning to be the issue that Democrats are going to push and push and push. And I think that they basically are starting to realize we need to be voting yes on more policies that are quote unquote pro-family. And the child tax credit is about as pro-family as you can get. It's helping poor families with literally just helping their children survive. And so my theory about this is that it's the beginning, similar to the Anna Paulina Luna thing that we were talking about the other week, beginning of Republicans finding roundabout ways to sort of work against what they've said about, you know, sort of work with what they've said about abortion.
Well, it's like, we're going to make you have the kid. Now we're going to help you pay for it. You know?
So there, it's like, how can we kind of clean up our mess? Because I think that there are a lot of Republicans who are like Nancy Mace, who are saying, we're wrong about abortion. We need to be more nuanced, blah, blah, blah. And there's a lot of Republican politicians, arguable how many voters there actually are that feel this, who are drawing a line in the sand. So I don't know. That's my theory, is that this is like the beginning of a wave.
I mean, that's why I was so surprised you said that the Democrats were against it. And I was like, it has to be something related to abortion here.
Yeah.
Honestly, the anniversary of Roe v. Wade passing was this week, and Biden released some very powerful videos of women who have been forced to leave their state or suffered medical complications because they could not get access to abortion. And I just feel like this is the issue that Republicans know they're going to have to figure out how to campaign tactfully on.
Yeah, I would say, you know, I think your specifics on this as it relates to abortion from like a policy optic standpoint is very astute. And I think I suspect you're probably right. And I wonder how much this plays into the overall feeling that Republicans seem to be like continually siding with unpopular issues. Right. So they have a few core issues that are very popular with a general. But obviously, abortion is not very popular with most Americans. You know, that they have vocal.
The opposition to abortion, you know.
Yes. I'm sorry. Abortion bans are not popular with, you know, 70+ percent of Americans. And so, you know, Republicans are very much the dog that caught the car there. That is not a good, that is a horrible policy issue for them. And yet, you know, so much of the chatter is from a very small subset, not super small, a significant subset, but a small subset that, it, you know, is very pro-life, right? And I think that this issue, this reality expands to other elements such as, you know, wokeism and, defying the DEI movement and, you know, all of these sort of social constraints that I think we saw in Ron DeSantis's failed presidential bid that, you know, he ran. Those were his core issues. Mm-hmm. He ran as somebody who, look at all of the things I'm preventing you from doing. You know, and education is another one. But at the end of the day, those aren't the issues that rally Republican voters. They just aren't statistically, if you look at it. Otherwise, if they were, he would have trounced Donald Trump in Iowa. He'd still be in New Hampshire, and he'd be looking great in South Carolina. But he's not. And I think that what the Democrats have figured out is abortion is going to be the rally issue that gets everyone on the Democratic side out. And I think the Republicans are shading towards immigration being the Republican issue that gets everybody out. And so I think what we're heading towards is an abortion versus immigration election.
I agree. I'm not going to disagree either with that.
Guys, I didn't plan this segue, but my tweet
has I knew there was a segue here. That's why I'm being silent. Pause for the drink.
Yeah, what? Like, I'm sorry, hold but you're like, oh, look at...
No.
By the way,
Michael just took a real
he has a huge goal, and you're talking to him on the phone. You're like, is there a camel?
Do I have? Do I do that? Yes, man. Sorry.
But it's not a good habit. It's like a pensive pause. It's like a pensive pause. It's kind of like, let me get. Okay, I'm gonna speak.
This person whose tweet I'm about to read is very good at the microphone. Here we go. President Biden wants to give more money to solve the problem at the border, and Mike Johnson said no. Republicans don't want to solve the problem. They want to exploit it for their political narrative. Democrats want the fix. MAGA Republicans want Fox.
Hey, is it a woman or a man?
It is a man who identifies as a man.
So woke, Michael. So woke. is it Jared Moskowitz?
Ooh, good guess. Good guess. He's a fella.
I don't think it's a border state.
It is a border state, but not a border district.
Okay.
If that
like Ruben Gallego?
No, it is our boy Eric Swalwell.
Oh, you know,
we forget that California's a border.
California's a border state, folks.
I was kind of thinking him, but I didn't know if.
Yeah. So obviously, we just gabbed about how this election is probably going to be abortion versus immigration. And Swalwell was saying this with response to this delegation of leadership that just met with the president last week on figuring out a Ukraine and Israel military aid package. And Republicans are tying border measures and immigration policy changes to this package. And basically, the White House has said, what do you need to get this done? And Mike Johnson, at apparently the instruction of Trump, candidate Trump, has said, there's nothing you can do, quote, we're never going to support this because it would help the president. So.
No way.
Yeah. So.
Is that officially on the record or that's like hearsay?
No, that's officially on the record. And let me read you.
Interesting.
Mitch McConnell said about all of the concessions that the White House and Democrats are making. He said, if we had a 100% Republican government, president, House, Senate, we probably would not be able to get a single Democrat vote to pass what Senator Lankford and the administration are trying to get together on. And Senator Lankford has been one of the Republicans leading a bipartisan group to find a deal. So he said, this is a unique opportunity to accomplish something in divided government that wouldn't be there under unified government. And so effectively.
So Mitch McConnell. Same opposite of Mike Johnson. He's like,
correct. And many Republican senators are echoing that statement saying, listen, the Democrats are making serious border concessions. And by the way, they are. If you are a militant Democrat, pro-immigration, you know, and you are disgusted at Republican policies, you are going to be upset at this because this feels like a Republican bill by those standards. But the reality is that what the Republicans and particularly the far right are pushing for is so unattainable from a bipartisan consensus that they're blocking this bill effectively so that it fails.
Well, also, but can I just say, like, kind of the reverse of what I was saying about the child tax credit and abortion, I think the Democrats are going to structure that on immigration. I think that, like, there is a sense that this is not a good issue for Democrats. I think that there is a sense that things need to be more in order. And I think that you're going to start to see Democrats taking more, not maybe like a hard line, but starting to propose more, I guess what they would call solutions, but probably like more, you know, tactful policy to address immigration in a way that maybe Democrats have never done before. Because I think that some are seeing that, like, this is not an issue that's going to help us win election, because of course there are some things that are out of people's control, but I think that even if you're really liberal, like, you have to admit that this is not ideal what's happening right now.
And to clarify, a lot of the concessions have to do with border security. So billions being sent to beef up border security.
Democrats have said they support for a long time. And I think they're trying to get that clear of, like, we've always said we support border security.
Right.
We also just support pathways to citizenship for asylum.
Right.
Yeah.
Anthony, were you about to ask a question?
Well, I was just about to say Mitch McConnell is definitely senile if he's proposing that. This is, you know, I mean, that gives me a glimmer of hope. And
I think he's fed up.
I was trying to think about how you could almost negatively impact our politicians for not trying to do something, you know, good for the country. And, you know, this is maybe not the example, but once again, the fact that people are saying, no, this benefits the president, like, shit, man.
Yeah.
It's not the president. Yep. You're dealing with 350 million people that this is going to affect. And.
But by the way, much more than that, like, if you think about the actual immigrants.
Sure. Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm like, just like thinking of the population of the country, but
no, but
it yeah, no, no. And I agree with you. Yeah, that's and
well, and it's wild that, you know, there's a couple of things I think that are wild here. So, you know, Donald Trump is effectively quarterbacking the shutdown of this bill. Right. That is very clear. That's he has said that, you know. I mean, the one thing about Donald Trump is he tells you what he's doing. So he has said that. And then a lot of these Freedom Caucus people have come out and said, you know, we're not going to do this because it helps the president and we don't, and it helps Democrats. And, you know, they couch it under the guise of, oh, well, this isn't a good deal. But the fact of the matter is that this is the most bipartisan deal on border security that has come out of the government in the last two decades. I mean, those are just the facts by the numbers, right? And so, you know, somebody like Bob Good, who, you know, is not on our platform. He's, you know, one of the Freedom Caucus, you know, leaders. He's been a vocal advocate for, you know, squashing this deal.
Honestly, if some of these congressional Democrats, like, get their shit together in swing districts campaigning, like,
yeah,
this, if I was a moderate voter, this, I mean, it pisses me off anyway, but, like, if I was a moderate voter and someone said, I voted for bipartisan immigration reform, whatever you just said, the biggest immigration, you know, takeover, whatever, reform policy in 20 years, like, I was stopped by people like my opponent, who did not want to get something done. Like, to me, if I was an independent voter or a moderate Republican, that would drive me insane.
Yeah. Well, and I think that the sad reality of this and is that, you know, what I've noticed is that a lot of I think Democrats, objectively speaking, Democrats are better at holding their own party accountable than Republicans are. And I think that more so, like, I think this is a disgrace, right? That the government, that the Congress can't come together on this. But I think what's more of a disgrace is that the Republican voters are not going to hold them accountable for that. And the whole reason that people get disenfranchised with politics, and the whole reason that people get, you know, totally cynical and pessimistic about Washington not being able to get anything done, is exactly this. And so, you know, this is how you just sort of further voter disenfranchisement. And I think that the more that people aren't willing to sort of step up and call this out in their own party. And look, we've seen it in all parties, but right now we're seeing it in the Republican Party in spades, is that, you know, they're going to lose elections off of this shit. And if Democrats are smart, like you said, they're going to use this as a major political weapon to say, listen, we met them halfway. We offered this amount for this, and they said no. And they refuse to fix the problem.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
I agree. All right.
No, did I do an upper or a downer for your two uppers?
Oh,
I think a little bit. No. I mean, it's a little down, but
it's a little rampy. Right. It's a little rampy. Anthony, yeah.
What's your last call?
Last call, yeah.
Oh, my last call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wake up, buddy. Wake up. Still rolling. Still rolling.
I don't know about a last call.
Hold for throat, I mean, clear. Hold for throat, clear.
I will say one thing that I keep hearing from people, and it was tough, and we talked about it at the beginning of the segment, is there's not a lot of people who are super engaged with the presidential election right now. And I'm really worried about how this is going to turn out. Where once again, in the office of 150 people, everyone's like, well, yeah, Trump's going to win. And you go,
wow.
And then we have Biden, and everyone's like, I'm just hoping something changes before the election. And you're sitting there going, like, what
like
could
what?
That be?
What's going to change? Someone's going to die?
Also,
aliens, hello, we're good people. Keep
also,
us.
You hope something changes. How about go change something?
And so here's my other, all right, here's where I disagree with you on that, is people's lives are tough right now. Right. People are talking about inflation. People are being laid off,
which is down, by the way. Inflation is down.
Yeah. They haven't been eating like me. So, you know, it's
to allocate time to go like be active again.
I'm a single person. I don't have a family. So I can't even imagine people who are have a family or like, yeah, I'm going to go.
Will somebody take the boy in?
Yeah. Someone help me. Anyways, what's on your minds?
If you would like to adopt a young adult child in Denver, call 1-800-PRESS-POUND to speak to an operator.
Help me.